This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's the end of the academic year, and tens of thousands of students have just finished their thesis, or they're just about to, or they managed to beg an extension of some sort or another. Many college degrees require an extended original piece of work, usually in print, but sometimes a play or a film or a piece of music, and students often have to then defend their work in front of their professors. Almost everybody who's done it remembers the all-nighters, the doubts, the terror of that oral presentation, but many have a harder time remembering what it was. For others, of course, it was the first major step in their career. Today, we want to hear your stories from the trenches of thesis writing. What was it about? How did you maintain your sanity, and does it affect your life today? 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email talk at npr.org. You can also comment on our blog at npr.org/blog of the nation. Later on in the program, editorial cartoons that were too hot to handle. But first, the thesis. And why don't we begin with a phone call? We'll start with Jenny. Jenny's with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi there.
Hi there, Jenny.
I actually had the opportunity to go back to school as an adult in order to do my thesis, so that was kind of fun. At the age of 39, I quit my job at an NPR station in
really?
Eugene, Oregon, and went back to school.
That's a very poor precedent, Jenny.
Well, sorry.
And what was your thesis about?
I actually wrote 83 pages and did a 13-minute documentary about hip-hop music in Ghana.
Did you go to Ghana to do this?
I actually did get to spend about 7 weeks in West Africa, in Ghana, on a group trip, studying music and culture there, and then did some study on my own and conducted some interviews that I used for my documentary. But I had to shift topics when I got home because I thought I could do something about what had happened to high life music in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that when my communications professor said, "And so how does that contribute to the theory of communication?" I kind of said,
humana,
and decided that the body of research on hip-hop was a much more wealthy field.
There is a moment, I suspect, in this exercise where everybody channels, as you did, Ralph Cramden, humana, humana, humana.
I think so.
That documentary, I suppose your training at an NPR station came in handy there.
Well, just in general, putting together news stories and that kind of stuff is second nature now, but it was interesting to patch together a story that was not what my interviews were about either.
there you go. And so now, after completing this thesis, are you going to go start a career as a hip-hop producer in Ghana?
Actually, no. I don't think it's a very rich field right now. I'm much more interested in doing world music journalism. I went back and got the communications degree and also took a minor in music just so that I'd be able to interpret musician to layperson a little bit more easily as a reporter.
So if you pursue that, this will actually be more or less what your thesis was about.
Well, yeah, that was kind of the idea. But, you know, at my age, you don't waste time.
Jenny, we're not going to waste any more of yours. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you so much.
Good luck with it.
Thanks.
Joining us now is Liam Daly, a recent graduate from Washington College in Maryland and this year's recipient of the Sophie Kerr Prize. He won just over $60,000 for his senior thesis. He's with us from the studios of WHYY in Philadelphia. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Now, this is the largest undergraduate writing award in the country this year. It must be a little overwhelming.
It is a little bit overwhelming, in fact. I think it's getting to be more and more of a surprise the further I get away from having my name called out there at graduation.
Did you know your name was going to be called out?
No.
No?
No, it was a, no, I was just as surprised as everyone.
Really? So this was a, you know, they opened the envelope and you found out who won?
Basically, yes.
Well, that must have been. And then all of a sudden you realized there must have been a flush.
Yes, well, apparently I took quite a long time to stand up and be recognized, they tell me. I don't know. It didn't feel like such a long time.
And there are many rewards, of course, intellectual and otherwise, for writing a thesis. Most of us don't get 60,000 grand.
Well, no, I suppose not.
Yeah. What was your thesis about?
Well, it was a double major, so I had to write two theses. I wrote an English thesis, which is a long academic paper on representations of the supernatural in Middle English romance, so Gawain and the Green Knight and works like that. And the second one, I was also a drama major, and I wrote a play, a full-length play that was performed in April. It was a comedy called What the Cat Said.
Mm-hmm. And presumably went past Meow.
Yes.
Okay.
You might say indeed.
And this is not your first play, as I understand.
No, this was, I think, my third or fourth. Yes.
And so this double major, so double thesis, were you in that crowd that then has to go defend your thesis?
No, fortunately not. I was very lucky in that they just sort of they assess it and they tell you whether you pass, you fail, or you got honors. So,
and in an odd sort of way, I guess presenting your play in front of an audience, well, there's defending your thesis for you.
That really is the asset, especially with a comedy. If no one laughs, then something is wrong.
This must have been really difficult.
Oh, well, I mean, I wasn't allowed to direct this piece. We had other people to do that.
That was their thesis, the direction of the play.
No, actually, but it could have been just as easily.
Mm-hmm. And this is a pretty tough competition. I read something about your award. 40 different people were considered for this?
Yes, from a number of different disciplines, although it is specifically a writing award and a literary award. You know, people from the philosophy and history and political science and... Yes.
Hmm. Now, Sophie Kerr, as I understand it, a name with which I was not familiar, was a writer in the 30s and 40s and donated the money for this award to the college. And I guess half goes to for other purposes and half goes for this particular award. You're an English major. Are you familiar with Sophie Kerr?
I have not read, I'm embarrassed to say, a single one of her works. I think I know anyone who has read a single one of her books, but apparently she must have been... You know, well enough in her time, if she was
she did
able
pretty
to
well.
Leave this estate to yes,
she did pretty well. I you know, again, I had never heard the name, but are you going to feel honor bound to go read something of hers now?
I think I might. The Washington College Library has a fair selection of her works. This is probably not surprising.
Not surprising, probably bound in gilt and print on the covers.
Yes, and quite an accomplished playwright in her own right as well, which. Came as a surprise, so in addition to her novels. So,
and what of you or what do you plan to make of your degrees now?
Well, I'm going to graduate school next year in Scotland at the University of St. Andrews, so that'll be good, and mm-hmm. $60,000 can't hurt as far as that's concerned.
Sure not. when you finish graduate school, do you plan to are you going to be a playwright?
Well, that would be wonderful, in fact. I mean, I don't know if I have any ambition for this play. I've been told that I can do a decent bit of business with it if I clean up the language.
Off Broadway, you don't have to bother about cleaning up the language.
That's true. That's very true. But teaching would also be certainly in the future.
Teaching English?
Teaching English, teaching at the university level, teaching, yeah.
So all that stuff about the Green Knight, that's going to come in handy maybe.
Oh, certainly, certainly.
Yeah, and maybe even the Sophie Kerr books. Liam Daly, you're off then. Do you get to take the summer off and celebrate?
Well, I'll be working, but yes. I'm basically doing a fair bit of celebrating and have been for the past week.
Congratulations again.
Well, thank you very much,
and
sir.
And good luck with it.
And to you.
Liam Daly is a recent graduate from Washington College. His senior thesis earned him the Sophie Kerr Prize, for which he took home more than $60,000. And he joined us today from the studios of WHYY in Philadelphia. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Jennifer. Jennifer is with us from Boise, Idaho.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you today?
I'm well. Yourself?
Good, thank you.
And your thesis?
I have just finished my Master of Science in Applied Anthropology, focusing in emergency management and disasters. And what we had to do for our practicum was find a client and write a report to them that we would also present to our department. I spoke with a local emergency management coordinator for a city of 50,000, and he expressed the desire to speak with the local hospitals in the area to better coordinate his emergency services with their abilities, capabilities, and so on. I had Homeland Security tell me that I could not do it. I was told by the local health council that due to issues of non-disclosure, that I could not speak with anyone, regardless of the fact that the emergency management coordinator for the city was the one getting the information.
And did your thesis advisor accept this excuse?
Yes. I became a bit of a joke, seeing as how I study disasters. but I did have to start all over and come up with an entirely new project, and it created me having to graduate 6 months later.
Oh, well, what subject did you come up with? The willingness of public officials to deny access, perhaps?
Well, actually, we're my professor and I are co-publishing a paper on that as we speak about security as subversion in a way. But what we did is we ended up doing a community assessment of disaster preparedness for the city to see what the local community needed, what they thought they had, and how they could better their response times.
And if you succeed with this, are you going to go on to maybe get a job in Homeland Security and deny students access to any information?
Well, I'm hoping to be that mediator between the two so that perhaps we can get some better communication so that we can make our cities and towns more prepared in the event of a calamitous, or mass casualty event.
Jennifer, good luck with it.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate the phone call.
Bye-bye.
Joining us now is Jonathan Meltzer. He's a former editor of Current magazine, a recent graduate of Harvard University. He joins us from the studio at the Harvard News Office in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thanks very much for having me.
And every year around graduation time, Current magazine composes a list of unconventional, slightly offbeat college theses from around the country. What are some of those that you and your staff came across under the rubric, of thesis pieces?
Yeah, it's a feature that we do actually every issue when we come out quarterly. And we look for the quirkiest, the funniest, just the most out of the ordinary theses we can find. And some that we found one called Strategically Singled Out by a student at North Carolina Greensboro, and he used statistics to study the decision-making strategies on the 90s dating show Singled Out on MTV, and used it to figure out the best strategy in order to win.
Mm-hmm. And as you suggested on your website, perhaps he spent a little time studying Jenny McCarthy, who was one of the contestants.
She was the host.
She was
the host.
It
was possible.
Uh-huh.
We thought it was possible he was spending some time looking at her instead of just what the decision-making process was.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan Meltzer, stay with us. We're going to continue talking with Jonathan Meltzer, the former editor of Current magazine, and we hope with you. Give us a call. What was your thesis about? Do you remember? What was the process like? And what application has it had on the rest of your life? 800-989-8255. 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. Plus, we'll talk about the secret of Hillary Rodham Clinton's college thesis. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Amy in Brisbane, California writes, I wrote my MFA poetry thesis in 2 weeks. I'm a notorious procrastinator and put it off for 3 years. I found this to be the best possible strategy, however. Under the gun, I had a poetic breakthrough and wrote some of my best poems in those 2 hellish weeks. What I got most out of this experience was discovering that I could indeed complete the task, and I now have 3/4 of my first full book of poetry completed. And we got this email from Andrea in Corvallis, Oregon. Going through the thesis process was devastating to many students. When I was in graduate school, almost all of my friends were in counseling because they began to severely doubt themselves and their abilities. Mona in Fulton, Missouri emailed us, I did my thesis on race car driving and bull riding as dangerous occupations. I compared it to prior research on occupations such as that done on iron workers and to Irving Goffman's presentations of self in everyday life. I also had to do a presentation which was truly nerve-wracking. Did it have an effect on my life? Well, Mona wrote, after completing my thesis on one of the bull riders who I interviewed extensively, asked me out. We've now been married for 27 years, and both our sons are going to college on rodeo scholarships. So, hey, there's the way to move with your thesis. With us on the line is Jonathan Meltzer, who's a former editor of Current magazine, which surveys interesting theses every year, quarterly, as he put it. Jonathan, it was interesting. You have a category called just want to read it just because of the title.
Yes, we do. And we've found some really funny ones that we didn't even have to read the thesis just to know that it would be interesting just by what the title said.
Application of a geographical information system to ice hockey shots.
Yep, that one seemed to take math and statistics and environmental science to a whole different level.
Pardon Martha, an image restoration analysis of Martha Stewart living Omnimedia. You can write a thesis on this stuff?
Apparently so. I mean, you can write a thesis on just about anything.
Heavy metal subgenre is a content analysis of lyrical themes. That from Stetson University. And Breaking All the Rules, Queen Latifah's representations of the black female body in film. This is fascinating stuff. What did you write your thesis on?
I actually did not write a thesis. I was too busy on the magazine to have time to do it, unfortunately.
So in a way that basically your publication was in a way your thesis.
I guess so. It felt that way a lot of times when I was up at, 3 and 4 in the morning.
Mm. There's another category you have that I thought was interesting called actually interesting. In Search of Cloud 9, can we make a distinction between the usage of recreational drugs and mood brighteners? That from Michigan State University. And I also like The Devil Made Me Read It, Arnie Senlin and St. Joseph's College about religious families' moral reading of the Harry Potter books. How many things did you have to go through to find these?
Well, the way that we usually find them is we send out queries to professors and to colleges asking for any of the strangest, most interesting theses that have sort of jumped out to these professors at the communications office of schools. And we usually get hundreds of theses sent to us, which we then sift through every issue and pick, the 4 or 5 or 6 ones that we like best. And mm-hmm. So it's actually one of the most fun things we get to do, to look through all the different things that college students all over the country are writing about.
Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. Joanna's with us from San Antonio in Texas.
Hello.
Hi, Joanna.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
I'm well, thanks.
I did my thesis studying levels of the stress hormone cortisol in captive female ringtail lemurs at the Cleveland Metro Park Zoo.
And it was a good thing they were captive, because otherwise you would have had to go to Madagascar to find any of them.
Yeah, it saved me a lot of money as far as grad school.
Uh-huh.
The interesting thing that I had to do in order to get to measure the hormone itself was I collected fecal samples from the lemurs, which were marked with colored beads that the lemurs ate hidden in bananas.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew who was who, and then I had to bake the poop in an oven.
Wait, you had to bake?
To dry it out.
You had to bake the poop?
I had to bake the poop, yep.
This is above and beyond.
It was very pleasant smelling if you got used to the baking smell after a while.
I'm sure it was. And how much of this did you have to do?
I had to collect probably between 200 and 300 samples because I was collecting for about 6 weeks.
Hmm.
And yeah, in order to get the poop, you had to bake it. You had to dry it out. You would have to grind up the fecal matter. So after the baking, I actually used a coffee grinder to grind up the poop to make it into a powdery dust.
I have to ask, did you tell whoever used the oven after you were done with it what had been in there? And I assume that the coffee grinder went to coffee grinder heaven.
Well, luckily, those were in the endocrinology lab that belonged to the Cleveland Zoo. And so they were dedicated poop oven and coffee grinders.
Really? Okay. I didn't know that they would have set aside special implements just for that, but I'm glad to hear it.
And, well, afterwards, after we were done with the lemur poop, we actually were drying rhinoceros poop in the oven.
A much bigger job, yeah.
And grinding the rhino poop as well.
So do you plan to go on to a career as a poop grinder?
No, possibly because I'm actually switching into genetics for my PhD, and I still probably see a lot of poop in my future.
Okay. Good luck with it, Jean.
Thank you very much.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
There are people who use their thesis, and there are people who have their theses used against them. Bill Dedman is an investigative reporter for MSNBC.com, author of the article Reading Hillary Clinton's Hidden Thesis, and he joins us from the studios of WBUR in Boston. Nice to have you on the program today.
Hi, Neil.
And Hillary Clinton's thesis has become sort of a holy grail for a lot of conservative bloggers and talk show hosts.
If it hadn't been hidden, perhaps no one would have wanted to read it. In 1969 at Wellesley College, Hillary Rodham wrote her senior thesis on the renowned hellraiser Saul Alinsky.
A radical community organizer.
Right. And in 1991, in the first month of the Clinton presidency, some might say the first Clinton presidency, the Clinton White House called Wellesley and said that they didn't want it released. They wanted it secreted away.
Mm.
If you can go over to the library at Wellesley College and can read the thesis of any alumna, except the rule was, unless that graduate was president or first lady of the United States. So this was a broad rule with application to
one person.
So far, one alumna. Yes.
The once and future secreted thesis, perhaps. But
yes.
Nevertheless, as you write, it became public knowledge again when she ceased being First Lady.
Yes. Not everybody knew this. For example, in 2005, Peggy Noonan, the former Reagan speechwriter, wrote in the Wall Street Journal that she decried the continued suppression of this document, which she called the Rosetta Stone of Hillary Clinton studies.
Hmm.
But if you take the train up to Boston and take another train west, you go into the library, you can you have to check your book in a locker and ring the buzzer, and bring in pencils and no pens, and you can sit and read this 92-page writing of a college senior.
And is it a damning document that exposes Hillary Clinton as a communist sympathizer?
That seems to be the presumption. You know, you could read it both ways. There's nothing. It didn't strike me that there's a great lightning strike in it. If you are opposed to Mrs. Clinton, you would say, well, she didn't condemn Alinsky's politics. Some say he was a socialist. Perhaps he was. She puts him in a pantheon of great American Democrats, an interesting group, Martin Luther King Jr., Eugene Debs, who ran on the mm-hmm. Socialist Party ticket for president five times. If you're a supporter of hers, you would say actually in the text of it, she is critical of the Great Society anti-poverty programs of the 60s as bloated and wasteful.
Mm-hmm.
You could say she comes off as rather moderate.
I said they engendered dependence.
Yes. Her professor, her thesis advisor and professor said he would give her an A on the thesis. He did give her an A, the committee did, but he would give her an F on the political decision to hide it away.
And because it's been hidden away, one of the things that you discuss in the article is, first of all, does anybody's writings, 35, 40 years ago, is it fair game to be brought up in an electoral campaign?
Well, I guess today's college seniors writing their theses should beware that someone, if they plan to run for president, and probably those who do already know that they plan to someday,
mm-hmm.
they should be careful what they write. They may not be able to count on their colleges to abandon principle and set it aside, not let anybody read it as Wellesley did.
And you did talk to one of the guys who did the Swift boat ads against John Kerry. I guess Kerry was about the same age then as Hillary Clinton was.
Right. I asked this political operative whether he thought this would make a good ad. And at first he started to say, well, it was a long time ago. But then he began to think more about it. And he said, well, let's see. What could you do with this? Let's see. You could have a now, what was John McCain doing in the same year? Oh, he was a prisoner of war outside Hanoi. Maybe you could start to draw that contrast. And maybe it doesn't take that much today. Maybe we will see Saul Alinsky, the Chicago organizer, in some political ads in the next year.
Let's see if we can get a caller in on this conversation. Patrick is with us. Patrick calling from Scottsdale, Arizona.
Hi. Yes, I was going to say I'm only 27 years old, and I was much more, I guess, left-leaning when I was in college than I am now. And I was wondering if that might be the case with Hillary. And also, I'm not a Hillary fan, but I would be very reluctant to use something that was written so long ago against her. Same thing about the John Kerry, same thing about the Bush draft dodging. It was so long ago that I don't know if it's a really good representation of today.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to know what your guests thought about that. Thank you.
Bill Dedman?
Well, I think most people would agree, although maybe if you're piecing together in some context the entire story of someone's life, something so long ago can have some meaning. I mean, just because you wrote your thesis about rhino poop, as your earlier caller did, doesn't make you a rhino. Writing about Saul Alinsky doesn't necessarily make you a radical. But it's a piece. She was in her high school years a Goldwater Republican like her father. People
mm-hmm.
may forget that. And in her years at Wellesley, she became an anti-war McCarthy supporting Democrat. And that period of transition is some part of who she is today, though now much more pragmatic. Another way that it's used is to say not just that she was some sort of socialist or radical, but to say Alinsky was a believer of gathering power, often for power's sake, regardless of principle, regardless of the particular issue. And sometimes her connection with Alinsky is used in the same way to suggest that Clinton is some way a ruthless seeker of power.
Without ideology of any sort. And the other thing you point out is that Alinsky offered Hillary Rodham a job.
Right. She's characterized it as a job. She thanked him for offering her a job. We don't actually have any proof of that. It is clear that he offered her a position as a trainer, would have been a volunteer position, as a trainer to learn how to be a community organizer in a new school he was setting up in Chicago. Interestingly, she didn't take that path. She went to Yale Law School. Barack Obama, they're now meeting on the same playing field, did take that path. He went off and became an organizer for an Alinsky-style group in the same mode in South side of Chicago before he headed to Harvard Law School and then into politics. So we have two presidential candidates with a very strong Alinsky connection.
We'll have to see if Saul Alinsky makes it to the airwaves in the campaign ads of 2008. Bill Dedman, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Neil.
Bill Dedman, an investigative reporter for MSNBC.com, author of the article Reading Hillary Clinton's Hidden Thesis. He was with us today from our member station in Boston, WBUR. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Jonathan Meltzer is still with us, the former editor of Current Magazine, a recent graduate from Harvard. And let's see if we can get some more calls on the line about people's theses. With us is Haley. Haley from Salt Lake City.
Haley, hi.
Hi.
Yeah, actually, I'm fascinated to talk with someone from Harvard, and I thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I graduated from Swarthmore College in 1982, and I'm looking forward to seeing people in a few weeks at the 25th college reunion for my class. I had... first thought, actually, when I was 10 years old, I fell in love with ringtailed lemurs of Madagascar, same as that other caller.
Really?
Yeah, and I had switched from planning to become a primatologist studying with Allison Jolly in Madagascar, and in my middle of my senior year, I took a professor named Ken Lang, a poli-sci professor who was in the Clinton administration, to lunch at the college cafeteria, and I described to him what it felt like to have an energy block in the body. And I then talked with a bio professor, since I was a bio major, and I said I wanted to change my project. And the college professor told me he would fail me if I did.
Hmm.
So that night I went to the typewriter, because we still use typewriters instead of computers then, and I came up with a psychobiology major by cobbling together credits into two departments. And I went to the same professor the next day, and I said, because I'm now a special major, I can talk with you and I can work this project.
Huh.
And so the title was...
Do you ever consider the law?
What?
Did you ever consider going into law? This sounds like...
I went into medicine instead. Close enough.
Close enough. But it sounds like your mind works that way.
I love problem solving in ways that make people come up with ideas for themselves, too.
Okay.
My title was The Etiology, Physiology, and Psychological Aspects of Pain and Muscle Spasm. And from that, I trained with someone named Alana Rubenfelt in a method of body-centered psychotherapy. From that, I went to osteopathic medical school so that I could use my hands as the tools instead of just to hold them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went into rehab medicine so I could focus on the psychosocial and other aspects of people and their needs, and developed a career for myself in doing osteopathic manipulation as a rehab doctor.
So all of this stemmed from that one decision?
Yeah, well, it also led to the fellowship after my residency, where I met my fellow, who's my husband of going on 12 years, who's also a rehab doctor, and my research mentor from then, and I are part of the team developing a conference that will be at the Harvard Medical School in October on the first conference for fascia research. So 25 years later, I'm making good on my thesis.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
I wonder, Jonathan Meltzer, as you listen to these stories, people seem to have used their theses for very productive purposes, some of them.
Absolutely. I have a number of friends who have, including a very good friend of mine who wrote his thesis. He's a biochemistry concentrator and wrote it on chromosome movement in E. coli, and managed to use it and to hopefully make some discoveries that will help people learn a lot more about E. coli and use that to obviously help with curing diseases. And he's managed to write such a good thesis that he won a Hoops Prize, which is awarded to the 70 or so best theses at Harvard, and it got him into Harvard Graduate School for Biochemistry.
Well, congratulations to all those thesis writers who had to finish them up in late nights of work. Hallie, thanks very much for the call.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. And Jonathan Meltzer, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Jonathan Meltzer, former editor of Current Magazine, a recent graduate of Harvard. He joined us from the studios at the Harvard News Office in Cambridge. Up next, editorial cartoons that are too hot for print. Should cartoons get the same editorial scrutiny as text? Where do you draw the line on satire? 800-989-8255 or email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.